Infamous Indy presents The Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Malillo. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions of whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger. Hey everybody, welcome to Digging Up Dillinger. I'm your host, Joe Malillo, Todd Hiles, Stuart Fillmore, and of course, Travis Thompson. But wait, we will add another one, the ultimate special guest. Today, the closest living relative to John Dillinger, right now on the podcast, Mike Thompson.
Oh, I thought you were going to say John himself.
Welcome, Mike.
How we doing?
Awesome, awesome. If you're watching on
YouTube, I know everybody here but Todd.
Yeah. And we'll get into that a little bit, too. First off, thanks for joining us, Mike. We've talked about this a couple of times leading up to tonight and getting you set up. And if you're watching on YouTube, our viewers will see an ultimate background of what you dub your garage, what we call your garage. But you're really calling it like the Dillinger hangout, right? The Dillinger den.
Yep.
And it's all neon. The hideout. The hideout. And our listeners will have to excuse us a little bit. Mike, the microphone, we're using his computer microphone, so it's going to sound a little bit muffled. We're going to do our best to not talk over you, Mike. It's going to be hard to do because we're going to have a lot to say. But we're very excited that you're here. You obviously know Travis really well. You obviously know Stuart really well. Yep, too well. But here we are talking about Dillinger. Mike's been following the podcast. He's obviously been an integral part of our lives in this project and have given us the full blessing to continue to chase this story, whether it's the digging of the grave or digging up of the treasure. Either way, you've been full support. I do want to preference Mike and I have been talking for the last couple of weeks. I went over to his house. I set him up with this situation, although clearly not good enough, as you know, we're not using the microphone. But one of the main questions that I brought up with Mike, and we're going to leave it to the team too to answer these questions. But I just right off the bat, is there a story, Mike, that people ask you, being John Dillinger's nephew, that you get all the time? Go ahead and just tell us. What is that story that they ask for?
One of the things I get all the time, always, everybody's got a story. My grandfather, my aunt, they're always telling me, they went here, they did that, used to date John, all that good stuff. So anywhere you go, you always get stories. But some of them, especially ones, they always go, my grandfather or my uncle said they seen John after he supposed got killed around Mooresville. I mean, you hear that a lot, different places. But, yeah, always, he was around. I know he was. So.
Well, then confirmation. Then we don't even need to continue on the podcast anymore. Yeah, well, there you have it, folks. There's the answer.
People have seen him.
People saw him. So, you – I want to ask actually, because Todd doesn't know you, that I mean, you only heard of you. I would say, Todd, do you have a question for Mike that's been drilling at you since doing this podcast that maybe you have that you want to ask?
Yes. And this, my question, Mike, is when you heard about the map that they found, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, when we first went there and worked, was going to look for stuff, I laughed and I said, if we find a horseshoe, it'd be lucky. And then when Stuart found it, it was pretty amazing. And yeah, for somebody put something in a ball jar and bury it, it had to mean something.
Yeah, right.
What it means, I don't know, but it had to mean something, definitely. I was shocked that we found something, especially something like the map or anything else.
So when you put it in the ball jar and buried it in the backyard, did you think you were going to find it again? Or
well, I didn't know.
That's what Hollywood thought we did.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stuart.
It's amazing. It was actually, and Stuart knows better than us, because he was the one that was digging, and he hit, kind of under a big root, was over top of it. So when he hit it with the shovel, it actually hit that, and it kind of kicked, but it still broke the jar, but it saved it from tearing the map up, I believe.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing is, you know, there is raw footage of us actually finding that map that I think that's something that we're going to work on to try to present that and show that on the podcast because, yeah. You know, we've talked about this, you know, when we found it, everybody, including the film crew, was absolutely stunned. No one could really hold it in. And I think just really seeing the human reactions and emotions there, it will be clear to anybody that it was not faked. No. You know, just from the reactions of everyone there.
Well, if you looked at the jar and if you seen it actually down there with a root all over it, yeah. It'd been there for quite some time.
Exactly. Yep.
This is awesome. Travis, what do you have to say to your dad? I'm happy. The podcast is fun, man.
Oh yeah, I'm extremely happy now that we get him a part of the podcast team here. I would like for him to tell the story about, you know, grandma's experience with John when they came in April of 34. Dad, would you tell the audience that story about John playing a little trick on grandma?
Are you talking about the vest?
Yes.
Yeah, Billy and John was there, and so he put the car up in the barn, and so Mom was only, well, she wasn't even quite 12 yet, and she was little anyhow, and asked her, could you run up to the car and get my vest? Well, she's thinking like a suit vest, so she runs up, and it was one of the old bulletproof vests, the old heavy lead vest, and here she comes kind of dragging it back, and he's laughing, and Billy's laughing, and he kind of threw down some money in front of her, and they was laughing and stuff. But she didn't realize when she went up there what it was. She always talked about John, always, you know, just a big brother teasing her, cutting up with her, taking her and Doris to the movies. And actually, even when he was still on a run, when he come home, he took her to the movies there in Mooresville, and like nobody was looking out, you know, for him. So she always remembered and talked about that.
The relationship between your mom and John Dillinger, her brother. I mean, you have firsthand account knowledge of what she felt about him. What, Mike, what do you think the relationship was like? How would you describe the relationship in today's terms? Because to us, you know, he's a lot older, right?
Oh, yeah, 19 years. Well, and then Audrey... Between Mom and Audrey was 28 years. So Audrey already had a family, actually. So there's a big, big difference. Now, Doris was 4 years older than Mom, and then Hubert. John was like 19 years. Actually, John named Mom. He when my grandmother was pregnant, and he had a girlfriend that he really wanted to marry, and her dad kind of wanted her to marry another rich farmer's son. So he said, well, won't you name her Francis? So they actually went with Francis. So he picked her name.
That, and there are so many different stories that we've tried to tell, right? And it, but from our perspective, when was the first time that you talked to your mom about John Dillinger?
No, when I was younger, I didn't think much about it. I just knew he was my uncle and heard a little bit of stories. I probably never really asked too many questions until I was probably in junior high. I actually had a teacher in junior high start talking about John, and he started throwing some stuff out. And I sat there for a little bit, and I looked at him, and I go, you don't know what you're talking about. And he looked at me and goes, what makes you know so much? And I said, well, that's my uncle. I said, my mom's a baby sister. And I said, that ain't, what you're saying is not right. And then actually the principal knew who Mom was. And so we went down there. He kind of come back with his head hanging. And so I ended up having to do a report.
Did you get an A on that report?
Yeah, I did. And I, in later years, Travis got to do one, and they wouldn't let anybody else do one.
It's kind of hard to beat that report.
Yeah.
Mom research.
Let him have some pictures that had never been seen. And so
Stuart, you look like you want to ask him something.
Well, I was going to say when we're talking about the weekend that when John was there, FBI had had the place under constant surveillance. John had snuck in through the woods, kind of north of the farm, east of the farm, and he gets Francis to go get the vest, and that's a very charming story. But that's the weekend that we think that the map was buried. We can't confirm that, but there's pretty strong circumstantial evidence that it was that weekend when it happened. One of the things that we've speculated about, trying to figure out what this map is about, is that that maybe it was John and Francis, had the map out and they were just playing a game. It's like, hey, where do you want to go? And they just kind of, maybe drew some zigzag lines and maybe, hey, for good luck, maybe we want to bury this. And so no one, it'll be our secret, something like that, some kind of a child's game of some kind. That's something we speculated about. We don't know that because this map is still a mystery. It's a mystery we want to solve. And, we don't know what it is, but that's just one of the things that we speculated. And she was 11 years old, and so that would have been something for her that would have been, a fun game to play.
Yeah, there is, which I don't know if you guys have talked about it. I do have an address book that John left behind the last time he was home, and there's a lot of places that's in that address book that's on that map.
Yeah, we've toyed around. Yep. With presenting it to our listeners and viewers with the understanding of we're probably not going to reveal the whole thing in the hopes that maybe another TV production company wants to at least use some of it to themselves. But we do want to, as a group, look at it fully so that we're able to kind of like juxtapose to the addresses to the map and see if we could figure something out before we present it to everybody. I think it's so funny. I was just thinking, like, we obviously Travis has been living through this, but everything we've talked about and everything our viewers and listeners know, literally Mike has lived through it, right? Yeah. Like we've been telling you guys all this stuff, but like, Mike, you've lived in it. Like, your life is this podcast about digging him up. I mean, what do you have to say about us doing this? And then really what I want to know is, do you think he's buried in the grave?
Well, I used to think it probably 90%, pretty much 90-92% that it was definitely him in the grave. But when we got all those FBI files and got to looking through those and seeing different things, and one thing got me, they were still looking for him in 1962. Why are you looking for a dead guy? And some of the other stuff. And then Stuart's about the years and the eye collar. I mean, there's just a lot of different things. So gives you doubt. I just love to know one way or another. Yep. But it's either him or it's not.
Yep.
And I since Crown Point, or they was all forced to dig him up, and the cemetery changed their mind once supposedly the FBI showed up there, and then they didn't want us to dig him up. And I got to thinking, they definitely was a guy buried. So when my grandfather went there and put the concrete, did they go ahead and take him up, put him somewhere else? There's one empty plot still in that family plot. Did they move him? So did they decide they didn't want us to dig it up and find out there's nobody there? And so that doesn't mean he didn't get killed. maybe this moved him. They don't want anybody to know he's moved.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some funkiness. And Mike, I have the, I have a similar journey. Obviously, I didn't grow up that being a relative of Dillinger and such a close relative of Dillinger. But, I always thought too that, the FBI got their man, and that was it. I mean, it was that's just what you grew up with, And then when I started looking into it, based on when Hollywood said, well, we're not really interested in this map. We think you guys faked it. We want to follow the imposter theory. I thought just, hey, well, we can solve this real quick and, just exhume the body and get back to trying to figure out what this map is. But then I started kind of looking into it. I'd heard the imposter theory. I was aware of it. I knew that it had been around a while, but I had never considered it credible. And then when I really started looking into it, I came out with just, man, there's some real unanswered questions here.
Oh, yeah.
that are not, conspiracy theory stuff, that they're honest to goodness, just unanswered, questions that need answering. And I've said this before, that if I had been the FBI case agent in charge of this case, I would not be satisfied with the identity of this body. As it stands right now with what we have, I would absolutely seek every means possible to make a positive identification. And I think too that it is a reasonable consideration about, did they move the body? Because one thing, Mike, that your grandfather definitely was concerned about was that, some carnival people were going to steal the body and put John on display.
Oh yeah.
He had a genuine fear of that. And I think that is different times then. That is something that absolutely someone would have done. They wouldn't have hesitated to do that.
How long could they have gotten away with something like that?
Well, I mean, those were the days when you went to the local fair or carnival and, they had the bearded fat lady on display.
True,
So things like that, oddities like that were in the age before the internet and even television.
Of course. Yeah.
That would have been high entertainment. So it was an absolutely a consideration that I'm sure scared your grandfather to death.
Oh, yeah, they definitely did it back then because mom, when she traveled with her dad on the Crime Doesn't Pay tour, there was a petrified Indian. That was on that. I think she called him Big John.
Yeah.
And was on that. So she always talked about that.
Yeah. And another thing, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth, there's a body that was put on display and, shown at carnivals and stuff for years and years that was supposedly the body of John Wilkes Booth. I don't think it was, but. So that type thing has happened. And in fact, I know maybe going back a little before Dillinger's time, if a posse in the Old West, were chasing a bank robber or, some kind of desperado, and that when they caught the guy, usually, justice was administered right there. And then not only that, they would prop the dead corpse of the bad guy up and all pose with it. It's just different times then. And so, it was a real consideration that maybe someone might, rob John Dillinger's grave and maybe try to make a nickel off of it. So I think John Wilson Dillinger had a valid fear about that. And so I think it's a totally plausible thing that and we do know that after Dillinger was buried, that his father did get permission. He did all the things he needed to do. And did exhume that body, and then this is when supposedly they poured the concrete over the grave and made it impossible for someone to dig up. Did something else happen in that? When they did that, did they move the body? I think that's a valid consideration. I really truly do.
That's what I, since the cemetery was so forward at first and then he changed. I don't know if they found out something or
exactly
what happened. And then, maybe my grandfather, cause there's some of my great uncle my great uncles got family plots in there too. So did they move him, put him with some other family? And then not, and go ahead and put the concrete and let everybody believe he was there. So now he's more safe because he's not there.
Yep.
Could they have moved him, Mike, off property, off Crown Hill?
They could have. I really don't think they would have done that, but they could have.
Yeah.
I mean, my grandfather had brothers that had, they got family plots there, and I just got to thinking maybe they moved him and put him in one of the other family plots.
Hey, let me just back up a second. You had mentioned something about the crime doesn't pay to her.
Yes.
That's the first I'm hearing of that.
Oh,
after John got killed, or supposedly got killed.
Nice.
My grandfather and Hubert went on that tour some, not all the time, but he went on it. Mom went on it. And actually, Mom got to meet Bonnie's mom, Bonnie and Clark. Bonnie's mom was on that. Actually, she would watch Mom while my grandfather was giving talk and stuff, got to know her real well. And Bonnie's mom gave Mom about 4 or 5 links off the watch chain that was on Bonnie when she's killed. I still have those in a little envelope. Mom put them in. So Mom really thought a lot of Bonnie's mom.
And they traveled by train, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, all over, yeah, sure. Different places.
So you have Bonnie and Clyde's, Bonnie's chain link bracelet that she got killed.
Well, not bracelet, the watch chain.
The watch chain. The
pocket watch. About 4 or 5 links of that watch chain that was on her when she was killed.
That's insane. That's incredible. And then you obviously have the cuff links that John was killed in. Allegedly.
Yeah, Mom. Allegedly. Mom had the shirt that John or whoever was killed in. And in the mid-60s, she was pulled the trunk out and was going. She's going through some stuff in the attic, and she took it out and burned it out back. And she said, I asked her later when she told me that, I said, well, why did you do that? And she said, it was just bad memories.
So, I think we can all.
Yeah, I do have the cufflinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be something that any family member would want to keep. I mean, that is gruesome.
Yeah.
And I think it was stuck in a trunk with some other stuff when my grandfather passed, and my mom, they auctioned off the farm. So then when she got with my dad and she still had that, I think she'd forgot about having it. And when she seen it, I think she just took it out and burned it.
Sure.
Man. Oh, it hurts me because if she didn't, then we, anyway.
Oh, I know.
Right. Oh, yeah absolutely.
Yeah, when
I mean,
told me, I'm going.
it's like all my Pokemon cards my mom threw away. Except way worse.
You know, as a historian, you know, yes, absolutely. You would want to keep that, but again, as a family member, mm-hmm. that is, I wouldn't want any part of that.
Yeah.
I'm just. Like, do you feel like John Dillinger ever? Is there ever like a moment you're like, man, this kind of feels like I want to rob something? Or do...
I always said, if I was around back then, I probably went with him.
Yeah. Did you look up to him? Like when you started to learn about him? I mean,
you know, really, I never thought much about it. You know, in high school and in junior high, the one teacher brought it up. Most people around Mooresville knew Mom was kind of pretty quiet about it. She'd talk about it sometimes if she's in the right mood, but I never thought that much. I just knew he was my uncle and never thought much about it. Actually, on out of high school, I got to thinking about it a little bit more and seeing different movies and Mom would get to talking a little bit more and looking at some pictures and stuff. Actually, I got the last time he's home, because Mom was getting ready to turn 12, and he gave her 12 silver dollars. And I have, she kept most of them. I think I have maybe 7 of them. And 2 of them, she had put in this little heart thing and wrapped them and put a note on it. And one's her birthday, and one's my grandfather's birthday. It just happened to be the silver dollars he'd give her. So.
And that had to be stolen.
Well, Who knows?
I mean, he didn't go to the bank and pick it up out of his account. That's interesting. And we love that you have all this stuff too. I mean, I think our listeners, that to me is very interesting. I mean, I've been over your house. You let me hold the Derringer gun that John was killed in, or allegedly. We're going to stop saying allegedly. We all get it. It's all, yeah, John was killed in.
But that little Derringer.
Yeah.
He didn't have on him when he was killed.
Oh, okay. But it was his.
He was home. Whether he left it in a hurry leaving or whatever, it was in the bedroom where he's at. Hubert seen it, knew it was his. So Hubert had it. And then when Hubert passed, they had no kids. So I was closest male relative. So guns I got and a few other things from
Hubert. This brings up a good point. So Hubert was alive when you were – did you know Hubert?
Yeah, he died. Hubert passed in 74. So I was 20 when he passed.
So tell everybody, or tell us too, because this is great. I never thought of this before. But tell us about that, about Hubert. What kind of – like, I don't know anything about him.
He actually retired from the state police.
He wasn't
a cop, but he worked – because he had a gas station back when John was running around, and then he ended up going to work for the state police in the state police garage. And actually, his second wife worked there, and then she went on and was a secretary to a judge in Indianapolis. But so Hubert retired. I can't remember now. I had his retirement watch, but yeah. So he worked right there at the state police garage.
I love it. Of all the, just like Travis being a law enforcement officer, it's just funny how turn of events are like that. Would you say, I mean, what kind of person was he? How many conversations do you think you had with Hubert over the lifetime, over your lifetime?
Oh, well, the bad thing is when I was younger, I really didn't talk about John because it didn't really mean nothing to me
sure,
other than
yeah.
He was my dead uncle. And then Hubert, when he's younger, looked quite a bit like Don. I'm sure he got stopped for other reasons, but he looked enough like him to get stopped. I can't really say that Hubert told me a lot of stories just because I really wasn't asking him, you know, a lot about John. Hubert was a pilot and had his own plane. He had a plane way back. So
when John was running around, right?
I don't know if it was right when he was still running around or maybe a little after, but yeah, he had a plane on back there.
Would you agree one of the theories of the map could be a plane route?
It could be, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's something else that we did consider because the lines between the different cities, which, you know, we've called routes with quotation marks around them because they don't follow any of the known roads. So yeah, it's almost like either railroad tracks or maybe air routes.
Flight paths.
Flight path.
Clean down into Florida, up into just a little bit into Canada. I mean, yeah, it's kind of over. And that address book is from out west.
Yeah.
Sioux Falls.
Yep.
So,
I guess, Mike, what I was trying to get at with this line of questioning about Hubert and your relationship, nephew and uncle, right? Like your relationship with Hubert there. Like, what kind of guy was he in general? Like, what would you describe him like?
Well, Hubert was he liked to cut up a little bit, so
okay.
kind of like John. He was similar in looks when they were younger, and he definitely, when he was younger and John was around, he definitely helped him probably get away, put a hat on and a coat and drove away in the car so he could go the other way. He was driving when they wrecked the car.
Right. We've talked about that on the podcast.
He was definitely helped John several different times, and they found a map, a shell map, like the map, except it was an Indiana map that was in that car they wrecked.
That's right.
So, and that, I think, was from Hubert's station.
Well, Dad, you always said that Hubert always drafted very nicely. In the pictures I've seen, he drafted to the nines.
Well,
so.
I don't know how well. But this is now, this is colorized, but I don't know how well you guys can see this.
Yeah.
The youngest one is my mother, then Doris. Hubert is back in the background between
he really does.
And then, like John. Then John's right there.
Yeah. Is that a white hat that John's wearing, or do you?
I.
Or is I it just colorized?
Colored,
that
it's a light colored hat.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
That's a good picture. And it's funny. People saw him walking around Mooresville. We were just joking around. Maybe it was just Hubert walking around.
Well, you know, he definitely got mistaken in Mooresville. Hubert did a few times. He did talk about that. People would think, like the old any urban that they used to travel between Mooresville and Indianapolis and stuff. Hubert would take that sometimes, and they thought because he dressed nice and stuff and the hat, and they thought it was John. People go, oh, John. You know, we just seen John getting in. It wasn't John.
Yeah, I'd almost forgot about that urban.
Yep. Well, the picture of John standing on that bridge, that is old Indian. Because everybody goes, where's that bridge? Well, that bridge ain't there because it's the rail tracks coming in Mooresville still there, but the Indian urban's been gone a long time. And that's the bridge that picture was taken.
Yeah, this is great, Mike. I mean, guys, I don't know how you feel, but I'm just picking his brain. I don't know how I'm hope that everybody can understand that this is cool to have you just kind of focus on our questions.
I don't know if you talked about like when John come home from St. Paul, Minnesota, when he escaped there, he got shot. He got home. My mom jumped up on his lap. Well, he'd been shot in the upper leg, and it opened that wound up and it started bleeding. So mom didn't know what was going on. They brushed her off and had to work on it and stuff. But he'd been shot. Plus, they was laughing that they had the police, the feds had sent a trunk of some of the stuff home. And he come look, laughed. He said, well, some of this is mine, but this coat's Harry Pierpoint's. It's way too big for him. And he goes, this is Harry's coat.
Is that the time that John was throwing money down at Grandma?
Well, he done that a couple of, he did it when she brought that vest down, just messing with her, throwing some money down in front of her. But he would give her a little bit, you know, like silver dollars, and give her some money a little. And the one they call the family reunion, when they took all the pictures, Mom and Doris had went walking in the woods, which Stuart would know, kind of over from where the ravine was, where we found on to the north of that, into the woods and stuff. And they seen the feds out there laying in the woods. And they go back and told John, and John already knew. And they was there the whole time. They was doing the pictures and the whole thing.
It was crazy. You know, because now at the site south of where the farmhouse is, there's just a residential house there now. But back in the day, there was a barn there I guess there was like a pigsty of some kind. And the feds, we know, were in that barn. They documented that. And absolutely, we know that they saw your grandfather, Mike, go into that where we found that map back in the day was an orchard. And that, you know, the feds documented that they saw Mr. Dillinger go into the orchard with a shotgun. And then fast forward years later, when we're out there, you know, for that, filming for the TV show, and we find an old shotgun, the base of a shotgun shell. Yep. And I think it was a 20 gauge, and your grandfather had a 20 gauge shotgun.
He did.
So all that was documented in the FBI file. So they were all over there, and John was able to get in there, enjoy a three-day family reunion where they're taking pictures out in the front yard. In fact, the famous photo of John standing in front of the window with the Thompson submachine gun and the wooden pistol that he used to get out of the Crown Point jail. That was right there in front of the farmhouse. The feds would have been in a barn just across the road from there, and he did that all under their noses. It's just crazy that he was able to get away with that. But, you know, Mike, you mentioned, too, that when he showed up for that family reunion, he was wounded. He had been shot in the leg in St. Paul. And that was another situation where the FBI had him cornered, you know, in an apartment building in St. Paul. And he was able to get away from that, too. You know, so that's why they called him the Jackrabbit.
Well, Stuart, you went so fast there, you didn't let us insert our FBI jokes.
Yeah, I was about to do one.
You went so fast, right under their noses, and then you went to something else.
Go ahead, Todd. You got one? I got one. Do you got one?
No, fire it off.
All right, yeah. Stuart, it's not really a good look that a little girl and her sister could find the FBI lying in the woods. So.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, it wasn't actually the FBI yet. It was the feds.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't true. The FBI until later.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, anything to save grace for Stuart on this podcast.
It was the same organization. It just had a different name. It wasn't actually called the FBI at that time. It was the
Investigations.
BOI.
It was either the Bureau of Investigation or the Division of Investigation, because it's been known as all three. And I forget if the Division of Investigation or Bureau of Investigation came first. But it became FBI in 1935.
Who cares? It's not the Secret Service.
Travis, had you talked, like, I've got the kitchen table from the farm.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about that. Back then, I guess it was called a war stands with the wishbone on the back. And that, which actually, it ended up being Mom's. I had it when I was young, and I still have it. Carol took, my sister took, she took a desk, and I took that, which was mine growing up. But yeah, that kitchen table.
Tell us about the kitchen table. I'm not following.
It's the kitchen table from the farm. Actually, I'm not for sure if it was the one that they actually ate. It's got leaves, and it's a small, well, back then they was kind of smaller, but it's definitely was in the kitchen. I don't know if it's actually the one that they sat and ate at, or if it was like over against the wall and some stuff was on it, but it was one that was there when John was there. And then I had the family piano that John's baby picture was taken on. There's a picture of him on that piano, and Travis, when he's young, he used to always be over looking at stuff. And I said, John used to hide money down in there and stuff. And I come walking out one morning, he's up there looking, got the lid up and down and looking. And I just grinned, went on into the kitchen.
Was that just last week that he did that?
Yeah.
Now, if you could turn the clock back to 74, what would you say to Hubert? What would you ask him?
Oh, I'd ask him a lot of questions. Oh, and yeah. I would ask him one thing. When you went with Grandpa, was that John? Because it was John, my grandfather. It was Hubert and the owner of the Mooresville Times. And actually Mooresville, the owner of the Times, come out and is the one that notified my grandfather that John got killed, and he went with him to Chicago.
What a scoop.
I don't know if this means anything, but it's saying your call ends in 14 minutes.
Oh, don't worry about that. You worry about it there, Mikey. He's got it, all right?
You just
keep talking, dude. I'll handle the business. You just keep talking.
I would definitely be asking, and I would have then if I would have only – really been into it as much back then, I would have been asking him about the trip up to Chicago and all that.
Yep.
Because mom, if my sister and we was there, and maybe sometimes if Doris would come over, my aunt, and they right mood to get talking about it a little bit, because Doris was kind of like Mom. She didn't really talk about it much. They got followed to school, walking to school and following home, not trying to think they was going to catch John, but they was afraid somebody was going to kidnap them to get John to turn himself in. So they followed him to school and back. And this mom always talked how good the school was to her was pretty protective of people coming there asking questions and stuff. So the town,
I mean,
kind of was pretty nice to the family, really.
Yeah. The what was?
The town's people in Mooresville was really good to the family. They liked my grandfather. He was deacon in church and a farmer. And
sure. Yeah.
The man, you know, Dad, talk about questions to ask Hubert would be one, why was Hubert writing Germany about getting get citizenship in Germany, and who was that for?
Those would be interesting to know what he was doing.
Yeah, but we're here and we only got each other at this point. we are running out of time, as Mike so acutely noticed.
Well, I just happened to notice that.
Yeah, no, I'm. Hey, man, that's
you know, good. I'm a former union worker, and I
that's it. fellas, do you keep going here for the next couple minutes here? Is there anything that you guys think we're missing right now for the first first podcast interview with Mike? I mean, there's so much, but like, what's the most important in your minds? Where's the loot, Mike? Yeah. Just tell us, dude.
I got a ball drawer out back.
One thing I can say about Mike, he runs a mean backhoe. Because we have done our own amount of digging to try to follow up on some of the stuff we started with the TV project, and Mike was very capable and man did a hell of a job.
Great, so we have our backhoe operator, which just happens to be the nephew. I'll meet you guys at 2 a.m. at the plot, and we'll just roll up through the fence and dig them up.
We'll just go ahead and take it on ourselves.
Mike, yeah. I guess from a let's talk a little bit more recent really quickly. I mean, I think people often think you're doing this for money, that you and Travis found these FBI files and you guys went to court, and everything that happened in 2019 with History Channel and stuff was for money. I'm asking you this. I know you as a friend, a personal friend. I know that's not who you are, but what do you have to say about accusations such as that?
I just want to know myself, even if there's nobody else, just me get to find out one way or another. I just want to know.
Don't do that to us.
And yeah. And all those people think it's money. The only thing I've done is spent money.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Yeah. That's true for all of us. I mean, there's been no payoff on this. And, you know, no one's seeking that. That was, you know, for me, the original idea on this whole project was that, you know, we were going to try to find this buried or missing loot, and that, that Mike and Travis would, symbolically return this money, although there's no one to really to return it to now. But I love that idea. I mean, and I can just tell you folks out there that if you get involved in a TV project, you may think, hey, it's going to pay a lot of money. I can tell you
motivations. Yes. You need other motivations.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because having been in law enforcement, I always thought that cops were the cheapest people in the world. But until I met Hollywood and entertainment people, man, they will try to squeeze every nickel they can. And so, yeah, it's not about the money just because you're going to be on TV. I've lived it firsthand. So yes, it's not about the money.
Well, let me ask Mike this question. We go back to that imposter theory. If that would have happened, would John have reached out somehow a year later or sometime to your mom?
You would think so. He always stayed in touch with the family, but if he had got away and stuff, maybe he wouldn't have wanted to cause the family problems.
Is it possible that your mom would never have told you that?
It's possible, but I think later on, as I got older, I think mom would have finally said something about it.
But, and who knows, Dad, that letter, that's a one-sided letter that came from Europe that was written to Hubert, you know, after the fact that he had passed away, that may have been him reaching out.
It could have been. It could have been.
You know, and another thing that we speculated about the, as far as the imposter theory is that maybe it was something similar to the witness protection program before there was such a thing, because we know that all the members of the Dillinger gang were quickly wrapped up and killed shortly after the Biograph Theater thing with Dillinger. And, you know, was it some kind of was there some kind of deal that, hey, you know, if you'll help us clean this up, you know, you can we'll provide you. Yeah, we'll provide you a new life somewhere. And the cost of this is that, hey, you're going to be a free man, but you really can't ever, you know, have contact with your family again.
Oh, I don't know if you can see this hat I'm wearing. That's John's signature.
Yeah.
It's on the hat. I worked just for this.
I don't think he's a rat bastard, is what you're saying, Stuart. He's you think he was, Mike, someone he would turn his buddies in like that for a chance at freedom?
Yeah. I wouldn't think so, just from some of the things.
But. Yeah, exactly. And what I know, at least, I mean, Mike, obviously you have the family connection, but from what I know through, you know, studying these files and all the people that have, you know, that describe John and talked about their interactions with him, it doesn't fit that he would do that, especially considering that, you know, when he got out of prison, he didn't have to do this. He's out of prison, and the first thing he does is he starts working to try to break his friends out.
Into the sewing room. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't fit from that standpoint. Again, that's just something we speculated about how maybe this imposter theory, you know, came about.
Well, we are almost there, guys. And Mike, he's going to be back again for another episode. We want you to send us questions for Mike. I have an email. It's diggingupdillinger@gmail.com. It's pretty simple. You just email us, comment on our TikTok, find us on Instagram and Facebook, and we're happy to ask some of. Maybe next time, Mike, we're going to have some serious questions for you from the viewers and the listeners. You think you can handle that, or were we tough enough for you?
Oh, I've answered a lot of questions over the years.
Next time we meet, I do want to know more about the letter that Travis just mentioned about from Germany. Because that's the first time I'm hearing that. So
there was a few of them.
There's a few of them.
It'd be interesting.
What a cliffhanger.
Yes.
What a cliffhanger. One last thing, Mike. Do you think your son Travis at all looks like your uncle?
Well, if you get rid of that hair, you know. We both got a big crater here.
Big,
but yeah, when he has
on the chin,
he's a little tall for him. But
oh yeah, a little bit.
Awesome. I mean, having you both on tonight. I mean, we had to, and our listeners, they're going to get us something special because yesterday we didn't come out with an episode. We waited till today so that we could all be on the podcast together. We planned it that way. So we are more than happy to have you back. And Mike, honestly, man, from just my heart, I'm just a huge fan of you. You're one of the most kind people I've ever met. You let me into your home right away with an idea about a true crime podcast. And I wanted to interview you and your son. And you sat me down. We had a couple drinks. And next thing you know, we're sitting around a table a couple years later with Stuart and our team talking about that's the infamous indie podcast that you can go and listen to. But dude, man, just seriously, thank you.
Yeah. No, me too. Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
You've been, well, Stuart's been here and always welcome, but yeah, he'll come down and introduce when he was doing the local news. So
yeah, I was still on TV
pretty well right off from the start.
When I was there last on Friday, you said to me, you said, "Hey, this guy used to be on Wish TV." Like, that's my thing.
Has been.
Yeah, has been. Would retired. Remember, guys? Retired FBI, retired Secret Service, retired Wish TV reporter. You guys, I thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for participating. And you know, we'll keep, if we got stuff for you, we're gonna bring it to you. But otherwise, you know, we're here to tell a story and answer questions. But we also know how important everybody's time is, so we want to make sure that y'all understand that we're gonna bring you real stuff, real stuff that makes a difference in how we think about this case, and maybe it'll jar something. DiggingUpDillinger@gmail.com. Until next time, folks. Thanks for listening.
Keep digging.
Keep digging. The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo and Grace Hiles. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.